There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 758, May 28th, 2018. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. Wonders of Oz on both sides of the pond. Very impressive. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, happy for Ricciardo, but must have been the most boring race ever. Is it done for Danica? And big news on the Western Front. Citroën will grace the 18th fairway as a featured mark at the 2018 Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance. And just as a reminder, we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab on the front page. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I am doing, sir. Very good. Thank you. Hope all is well on the left coast.
The left coast is lefty.
Yeah. Well, you know, Monaco, I don't know why they are saying it was a boring race. This procession has been going on for many, many years. But Red Bull front row was expected. And then came repeat performance from 2016 by their long-term prospect overflowing with talent, Max in the barriers. What a surprise. Another podium and quite possibly a win down the drain.
Very true. Max in the barriers, even Christian Horner is getting tired of the mistakes by the young protege. So much talent, but needs to be lassoed in and controlled.
Yeah, exactly. There is a school of thought that says Max will never win a championship. His all-out Max speed in all corners reminds me of Gilles Villeneuve. Very exciting to watch and absolutely never a dull moment. Gilles used to say, if you win enough races, you will win the championship. And he was right. In those days, that's how it was. Max has the advantage of too many races and too reliable machinery in his day and age. He can afford to throw away a race win or two and still fight for the championship, as he is not the only driver who is making mistakes in any given season. I think his biggest hurdle to win a championship will be his choice of team. I just cannot see Red Bull Honda, if it comes to that next season, powering Max to world championship by 2020. I think Red Bull should stay on the R&R program. Renault and Ricciardo.
Exactly. I mean, if they don't, it's a big gamble. Even though Toro Rosso certainly shows a lot of promise, but to sign with Honda and think you're going to be fighting for championships, I don't know how they could make that decision. And I think they've already decided they're going to stick with Renault.
Well, time will tell pretty soon. Teammate Daniel Ricciardo kept it clean and very fast in free practice and quali to grab his second pole in the Principality. Seb on front row and LCH behind him kept the championship battle brewing. Another no surprise was Nando. He is the only driver so far this season who has not been outqualified by his teammate. And speaking of Alonso, I would like to thank our mate Lucien in Perth, Western Australia, for his message concerning our comments on Nando lately. Well, you know what we have to say here is that we are not down or dissing Alonso. We as race fans are very disappointed in seeing such a mega talent not be in a competitive machinery. What can I say? Here is a man who made his F1 debut in 2001 and his teammate, young championship winner in every category before F1, is having a hard time outqualifying old man of C. Surprisingly, Sorokin has outqualified Stroll in 4 of the 6 races so far. Any other surprise or thing that struck out for you? in the quali?
No. I mean, we all knew Red Bull. I didn't know Max was going to crash in FP3, but I knew Red Bull would be on the front row if they had him under control. But eventually they'll get him buttoned up, I think. And where is Max going to go next year is an interesting question. I think he's stuck at Red Bull. But where is Ricciardo going is the question.
Okay, regarding these comments as the most boring race in the world, if there is a procession in Grand Prix racing, it is here for almost 2 hours every year. Take pole and you win the race, unless you are teammate to Seb. Passing is difficult is a cry of modern-day Grand Prix drivers on circuits like Barcelona, so none of it is expected in Monaco, a track that has remained pretty much unchanged since Lazio Nuvolari raced here, and that was many, many moons ago. But some of us remember a Tolman Turbo passing a lot of cars in 1984 in the rain. It may sound crazy, but it did happen. And the late Michele Alboreto passing Alain Prost twice in 1985. Then one day DC was blowing his Scottish backpipe, complaining Bernoldi held him up, not realizing the Red Baron had no problem passing the Brazilian. So I guess different strokes for different folk. Did you find the race boring too, sir, like Nando and LCH?
I did, and maybe it's the cars, because I do remember when there was great racing and great passing. It was much more testicular back in the day, but then the cars may have been lending themselves to that in the past, and now they just, I don't know. But I thought it was pretty boring. Fernando fell asleep twice, and obviously LCH, if he doesn't win, it's boring.
Yes, and that's what I think where the problem is. And as far as the Honey Badger is concerned, man, what a drive by Daniel Ricciardo. His new name should be Mr. 75%. Losing 25% of power with many laps to go and still win the race is very impressive. Loss of MGUK, according to Christian Horner, meant Danny Rick was down by over 200 horsepower. If that is true, that is really an amazing performance. Dr. Marco was extremely delighted, saying no other driver could have done what Daniel did. And I think this victory could be Danny's biggest bargaining chip for 2019, wherever he's going. Hard to believe he has the same number of wins this season as the other two men on podium in Monte Carlo. Danny Boy is third Australian driver to win the Monaco Grand Prix after Jack Brabham and Mark Webber. And for Red Bull, victory came in their 250th Grand Prix. They also won their 100th and 150th Grand Prix. Did you see the hug that Christian Horner gave to Dr. Marco?
Yes, exciting.
Oh, yeah, very loving. And this achievement is not bad for a team that first appeared in Grand Prix racing in 2005 in the land of Danny Rick. Victory has put Danny Boy third in the championship with 72 points. His teammate is sixth on 35 points, proving once again there is more to success than speeding at max rev all the time. And as always, no pun intended. Your thoughts on Danny's performance, sir?
Yeah, fantastic. And it's funny, but even before Martin Brundle mentioned it, I thought of Schumacher in Barcelona, stuck in fifth gear and winning the race. That was an amazing feat, really all braking and revs. So, I thought that was the best part is when I first, you know, I think it was lap 22 or something, and they reported a power problem. I'm just going, oh, no. And it never, well, I mean, there was a problem, but Danny kept the car ahead of everybody else, and it was stunning.
Yeah, and apparently, you know, part of the problem of everybody calling it boring is everybody was trying to preserve tires so they don't have to make another pit stop. And that caused the cars to be circulating at about 3 to 5 seconds slower than they should have been. But, you know, hey, you have to sleep in the bed you make. Now we come to Sebastian Vettel. Ever since the performance of Red Bulls in the slow corners at Circuit de Catalunya, talk of the track has been they will be the team to beat in Monte Carlo. And Sebastian Vettel had a front row seat for this movie for the entire race. I think both he and LCH were keen on damage limitation than winning the race. Second place finish was his first podium since victory in round two in Bahrain. But I have to say that Seb did make some inroads into the championship lead of Lewis, who still leads 110-96. Moving to high-speed tracks, I think we will see more of Seb and Hampshire. Lewis thinks championship is now a three-way battle, and I hope he is right. These two drivers are now the only ones who have scored points in all six races so far. Anything you want to say on the Ferrari situation with Sebastian?
I think once we get to high-speed tracks, it's going to be all LCH.
Yeah, I think there will be some Ferrari victories, and I don't think it's going to be Uber domination like days gone by.
No, and don't forget, Monza last year. What did Mercedes hand Ferrari?
Their own booty.
Yes.
Yes, talking of LCH, he was cruising for bruising. Podium finish in every race so far this season except China, where he was fourth. He is now looking forward to Canada, and so am I, where the first of his 64 wins and first of 74 pole positions were scored way back in 2007, days when Max was in junior karting. I think both LCH and Seb drove smart with big picture in mind, showing their maturity. Monaco is not the place to force the issue to gain a place or few extra points, especially if the fellow four-timer is lurking nearby. Behind the podium finishers were two Finns, Kimi ahead of Bottas, and even Bottas said that he knew he had a faster pace than Kimi, but there was no way to pass him. But this is not the first time it's been said about Monte Carlo. And then came two French drivers, Ocon and Gasly. Esteban Ocon had an impressive weekend and was sixth. This was his second points finish of the season. He is chasing the same dream as Nico Hülkenberg, the elusive first podium in Formula One. Pierre Gasly also scored for the second time this season. He was seventh. Amazingly, he did 37 laps on Hypersoft, so it looks like he's a pretty soft handler on tires. I mean, he can go, you know, just like Sergio Perez made his reputation in the Sauber days, if you recall.
Yeah.
His teammate Brandon Hartley was taken out by a brakeless Charles Leclerc. Leclerc became the first driver from Monaco since Olivier Barreto in 1994 to race in his home Grand Prix. Monaco apartment is on the start-finish line, and how cool is that? Which brings me a question to you. Would you like to have your AARP apartment on the start-finish line at Dijon-Prenois or Dover, Delaware?
Dijon-Prenois, monsieur.
You'll pass on the free hot dogs at Dover?
Totally.
Okay, Nico Hülkenberg was 8th ahead of Max Verstappen and 9th. He was impressive in passing cars without any argy-bargy, and Carlito Sainz Jr. picked up the final point from his 10th place finish. So we have two Renaults in the top 10. That's good. But I have to say, you know, if Max had qualified on the front row, given the problem his teammate had, could have been very easily Max's victory.
Absolutely. He would have. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think the team would have told Ricciardo to let Max go by.
Yeah, and they would have wasted no time in that radio conversation. Yeah, and Monaco was the first race this season where McLaren, not powered by Honda, did not score a point. Your Dios, Alonso, El Machismo, is asking for a refund for the fans after what he called the most boring race in the world. It looks like F1 thrill is gone for the two-time world champion. And as much as we, the racing fans, would like to see him in a competitive machinery, the performance of new package is not what he was expecting. And Zak Brown was asked about Nando staying at McLaren for 2019 in the pre-race conference. He said the team is waiting for his decision, so obviously Nando has all the balls and the cards. It is sad to see the misery of Alonso for the last three seasons, and it's continuing now. It reminds me of last few seasons of Graham Hill in Formula One, or how the F1 career of another great two-time world champion, Emerson Fittipaldi, came to a close. But I think we will find out by the summer break where Senor Alonso will be racing next season. And I was thinking that both he and Kimi came into F1 at the same race, 2001 Australia. Chances are they may say adios to Formula Uno at the same race also, which may happen this year. And you know, this news came in late today, that rumors that Kimi Raikkonen may be going back to WRC with Toyota, and Toyota has denied those rumors. So it looks like the clock is running out on Kimi.
I think the clock is running out on a number of people. Fernando, Kimi. I mean,
Romain Grosjean.
Yeah, Romain Grosjean. You know, what's amazing is he didn't crash.
Yes, that is very true. But that's the way it is sometimes. Finally, on the Monaco weekend, we normally don't do Celebrity Watch on F1 Weekly podcast, mainly because we have the biggest celebrity in the political studios in California anyway. But Tom Brady was in Monte Carlo, and I think Mr. Carey should chase him or somebody like Michael Jordan to promote Formula One in the USFA, because with names like these, it will take only a few TV and print ads to spread the word. That's just my 2 pesos.
Yeah, I thought the Tom Brady pass to Ricciardo from yacht to yacht was really silly.
Yeah, but it's good to have non-racing people at these events. You know, the sports gets more popularity, especially if you're trying to make it popular here in the USA.
Absolutely, it worked. It was the talk of the town.
Yes, sir. Shall we do a goodie bag?
Absolutely. We love goodie bags.
Today we have a postcard from Monte Carlo with Monaco memories. Some of these races I remember very, very well. And I'm sure most of our listeners will also agree on that. First, this was before my time, debut in Formula One at Monte Carlo for 2 famous teams, Ferrari in 1950 and McLaren in 1966. In 1955, we have Alberto Ascari in the water. 1965, Peter Revson from New York City wins the Monaco F3 race, which I believe is the only American success in the streets of Monte Carlo in a racing car. I am very pleased to say, friend of F1 Weekly, Alexander Rossi did start from pole in a GP2 race here in 2015. The original Mr. Monaco was Graham Hill, who took his 5th victory in 1969 with Lotus. 1970, last corner of the last lap, Brabham's blunder hands victory to Jochen Rindt. A very famous race here. 1972, one and only win for Jean-Pierre Beltoise. This was also the final Grand Prix win for BRM. Other French drivers who took their first F1 victory here include Maurice Trintignant, Patrick Depailler, and Olivier Panis. 1982, Didier Pironi, Derek Daly, Andrea De Cesaris all had a chance to win, but stopped in the final minutes of the Grand Prix, allowing Riccardo Patrese to win for the first time. Even he had spun on the final lap. 1984, 5th ever F1 race for a young Brazilian driver. His performance in the rain was first indication of what was to come. Another young star also made a name for himself in this race, Stefan Beloff. 1982, and this race has been voted by racing fans in a survey as the most exciting Monaco Grand Prix. Mr. Mansell was on his way to winning in Monaco in 1992 when he had to come in for a tire change late in the race, and what followed was the very best in junkyard dogfight with who else but his old rival, Ayrton Senna. The following year, Senna would get his 6th and final Monte Carlo win. 2004, the truly train ran on time but arrived on platform number 1 only once when he out-qualified his teammate. Who was that, Mr. Rogers? I can't seem to find his face in my mind. Help!
Bravo!
Yes, and also in this race, we had a case of tunnel vision. Schumi and Monty colliding during the safety car period, which was beautiful.
That was beautiful. So exciting.
Yes, sir. And I actually did a sort of a YouTube replay of the incident with Schumi and Monty, but I didn't have the time to do the replay of the Monty and the Jet Dryer incident.
Both classics.
Yes, sir. Shall we take a break before the MM?
Absolutely. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Are you in business and want to make a hard-hitting visual impact that gets your name and message promoted? F1 Weekly knows from experience that the creative team of Caton Designs are graphic design geniuses and a company that can give your brand a visual pop in a cost-effective way. Contact Caton Designs at ketondesigns.com for visual messaging solutions that get your business image seen.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Back home again. In Indiana. Did you watch the Indy 500, sir?
I caught the last, I think, 10 laps after the last caution.
Okay. Another win for Roger Penske, this time through Will Power, first Australian to win at the Brickyard, and final race in the life and time of Miss Danica Patrick, ended with a big bang on the wall. More on her later in the show. Tremendous weekend for Australian drivers, huh? Indy 500 winner, Monaco Grand Prix winner. And if only some guy from Australia had won the NASCAR race.
That would have been great.
Talk about a triple crown.
Damn.
Yes. Okay, Formula 2, previously known as Hapidos. 3rd pole in a row for Anglo-Thai racer Alex Albon. He led the race until colliding with 2nd place man Nick De Vries while both were entering the pit lane. Pretty silly. Impressive drive to victory by Russian Artem Markelov. Championship leader Lando Norris survived a drive-through penalty to finish sixth. Sunday's sprint race was won by Italian Antonio Fuoco, who is part of the Ferrari Driver Academy. Norris was third and maintains his championship lead. This kid is on his way to sixth championship win, all in rookie attempts. Talk about mega talent. Now we'll cover some races from previous weekend, because we did not do a podcast last week. DTM from Lausitz Ring. This is the track where Zanardi had his horrible accident and where poor Michele Alboreto lost his life. Eduardo Mortara won the race for Mercedes. Timo Glock was second for what the natives call BMW, also known as BMW in plain simple English. A big crash for René Rast. Good news is he is okay. Second race of the weekend was won by Gary Paffert. Pascal Wehrlein was third of ex-Formula One fame. MotoGP from Le Mans Bugatti Circuit. Local garçon Johann Zarco on pole ahead of Marc Marquez, who went on to win the race ahead of Danilo Petrucci on a Ducati and the Dr. Valentino Rossi on a Yamaha. Honda man Marquez leads the championship with 95 points. Yamaha rider Maverick Vinales is second on 59 points. WRC from Portugal. Back in the day, it was known as TAP Rally, named after the sponsor, the national airline, TAP. Those who have interest in commercial aviation may already know this. Airline now has a major investor, the gentleman who started JetBlue here in the U.S., and is today running an airline called Azul in Brazil. Back to the rally tarmac. Winner was Thierry Neuville in a Hyundai. Now we go to Formula E. Local Jungemann Daniel Abt took pole position and went on to win the race in Berlin. Lucas Di Grassi was second and Jean-Antoine was third. Felipe Baby is joining Formula E for next season, so it'll be good to see him back in motor racing. Money matters. Bernie buys Senna's McLaren. Good old Bernie paid just over $4 million to buy at a Monaco auction the McLaren Ford Ayrton Senna drove to his sixth and final victory in the Principality in 1993. Big E has an impressive collection of historic Formula One cars, which includes the 1978 Swedish Grand Prix winning car, the Brabham fan car. JJ, this was interesting. JB and JJ in helmet swap. Jenson Button has proudly displayed on Instagram new addition to his helmet collection. This is from NASCAR legend Jimmy Johnson, who is from Southern California. I hope JB does a helmet swap with Danica Patrick. This way, every time he puts it on, he can enjoy the wonderful fragrance of Ego East. More money matters. This was interesting. Another billionaire Bambino on his way to Formula One. The Latifi family from Canada buys 10% of McLaren Group. Now, there is this kid, Nicholas Latifi, racing in GP2. He's a pretty decent racer. His dad owns a company called Sofina. They are a very big food producer in the U.S. And according to a news item I read, this family makes the Stroll family look like, you know, peanut vendors, if you know, and they have so much money. So, Zac Brown was asked in an interview before the race, does that mean that Nicholas Latifi will have an automatic seat at McLaren? And he said that was not even part of the discussion. But, you know, if you have that kind of money that you can buy 10% of a Formula One team, it's only a matter of time before your son is racing somewhere in Formula, you know, with some team in Formula One. What do you think?
Probably the way McLaren's going. I don't know. I'm concerned. I know McLaren has a lot of cash. They're owned by deep pockets. But boy, I don't know. You know, maybe they should build their own engine and come up with something.
Yeah, you know, they're putting a lot of stress on getting involved in IndyCar. They've hired Gilles de Ferran as an advisor. I mean, you know, it's they need to decide if they want to be a big powerhouse in Formula One or be everywhere. But, you know, they're going to run it as a business, and whatever makes them money, they will do. But I do not see them coming back to winning form in the next few years. I feel the same way about Williams.
God, Williams is a disaster. I mean, Sorotkin was, I mean, how many penalties did he gather? And I don't even know why.
That's a complete washout, you know, the whole situation there. And you mentioned a few weeks ago NASCAR for sale. Apparently, Goldman Sachs is the investment advisor. The France family is not planning to sell the whole kit and caboodle. They recently bought the ARCA series, so I think they would like to stay in charge and very large in the roundy-round world. And, you know, good for them. Okay, sir, finally, our favorite Danica has departed. A look at her racing career. Podium in Formula Ford Festival at Brands Hatch was the starting point for this motorsport steamroller. Formula Atlantic historical victory at Motegi to become first female racer in IndyCar racing. Then came the move to NASCAR and equally historic pole position at Daytona. I think her impact would have been much higher had there been no split in American IndyCar scene, but she made the most of her opportunities, especially on the financial front. I think she can be a great influence in promoting motorsports to young girls, especially given her karting experience. And while we all take enjoyment from her towel fight with Milka and flare-ups with fellow drivers, I think deep inside Danica was a very determined racer. F1 Weekly would like to wish her a happy Das Vidaniya from the world of racing and all the best in future. Any thoughts and comments on this Patrick's final race, sir?
Yeah, it's done. I was hoping that it would be a respectable finish for her. Crashing out is not so wonderful. GoDaddy came back once again for her. So she had a lot of support. I give her kudos for trying. And I think, maybe she could be a test driver for Haas.
No, I think they can, if they are serious, they can use her in promoting motorsports to young girls, you know. I mean, there's no question she can play a big part there. I mean, this is not Carmen Jordá.
Very true. Very, very true. Oh, and I forgot to ask your opinion on Citroën, the WRC team, firing Meek after crashing so much.
Well, I was surprised. But, you know, it's one of those things, man, to finish first, you first have to finish, you know. It's something can be said for somebody else also these days at the top echelon of motor racing. But I was very surprised.
Yeah, I was too. But you know what? They just said, this is enough. He became their crashado. And I think they were really afraid that somebody was going to get killed, like a co-driver. So, yeah, very interesting. But they nipped it in the bud. I thought that was very machismo.
Yeah, you know, these big companies, they spend a lot of time and money, advertising dollars and a lot of PR activities. And if you keep doing crashing and stuff they're not interested in you doing, then this is the end result sometimes.
Okay, we're moving to Canada, next Grand Prix. And we know who reigns in Canada, your boy.
Lewis Carl Hamilton. I want to see, what I don't want to see is days of Nico and Lewis running away from everybody, which is not fun. What we have right now, most of the time, we don't know who's going to win. Even getting a pole is not a guarantee, okay? And you just never know who will meet Max Verstappen on the track. And I think that excitement is not over. Maybe subdued for a race or two, but it's going to come back soon.
I agree. No, Max, I think, is the linchpin on deciding Canada. I don't know. It's a power track, and I think Mercedes, they're going to turn that little knob. You know, they're going to go, well, sorry, Liberty, but, you know, instead of making F1 exciting, we're going to start dominating. And that's just the way it's going to be. I think Ferrari will be second, Mercedes first, and who knows?
No, I agree. I think in most of these tracks, high-speed tracks, and Canada has long straights, I think we're going to see if McLaren, Mercedes is winning, Ferrari is second. And if Mercedes is second, then Ferrari is winning. And the key here is the key for both these two guys, because, you know, I want to see a good battle. I want to both Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton keep finishing races, wherever they may finish. I don't want them one going out with a Kablamo or spun out by Romain Grosjean at the start or something like that.
I agree. And Kablamos are pretty rare now. So I think it's all up to Max taking out a few people, and maybe Fernando will have a good race.
Fernando Alonso, yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious now that if a Renault engine can dominate in Monte Carlo, and they've been pretty competitive other places, that at McLaren there are more issues than just the engine, which I had a suspicion, you know, because remember in the last few years of, or even when Lewis Hamilton was there, after 2007 and 2008, they were not really the powerhouse they used to be in terms of winning races.
Right. The Mercedes package was there, but they didn't. Yeah, they've got car design issues, suspension issues, aero package issues, to say the least. And it's sad because when Fernando Alonso is one of your drivers, to not provide him with what he deserves is a crime.
And I think, you know, maybe Liberty Media should get involved and put him in a competitive car, Red Bull or someplace. But talking of the car design, you know, this chief designer for Ferrari, this news just came out today, Simone Resta, there was a press release from Ferrari that he is leaving and joining another team. And shortly thereafter, Sauber announced that he is joining Sauber. So Sauber, under Frederick Vasseur and, you know, people with deep pockets who own the team now, looks like they are, I expect them to come back. I won't be surprised next year if they are much stronger than McLaren, to be honest with you.
That would be unbelievable and sad, sort of. But that's why I predict Fernando, this is the last season for him, so we should watch and savor every moment.
Well, he's done a lot over the years. I mean, he's left his mark in Formula One history, 2 back-to-back championships and some incredible victories, you know, Imola over Schumacher, the Nürburgring over Massa, the Malaysian victory. Second race for McLaren was very impressive. I mean, the guy is just an incredible racing talent, and I think he will be missed by a lot of people.
I totally agree, Nass. I hope you have a good time in Maryland and have a nice flight back home. I want to thank all the listeners who listen. Good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.